And to start off, I have an interview that I want to do with someone. Do you mind if I tell them a little bit about our backstory? So I have a friend with me this morning. I call her a friend. She's also a coworker. We've had an interesting relationship over the past 2 years. I had the distinct privilege to baptize Taylor the last day of 2021. So I hope she's comfortable with this. I told her after I baptized her, I'd been praying for 2 years, because we had some very intense conversations that sometimes would last well over an hour to 2 hours. I'm surprised that people didn't question, you know, why we weren't working. But in my mind, I was working. That's part of my job, the way I look at it. But Taylor's here today because Taylor's a person that is courageously going to talk a little bit about some mental health stuff and how it relates to faith. So we've put some questions together that I'm going to ask and she's going to answer and be as open as she feels like she needs to be. But one of the things that I remember telling Taylor, and I had full confidence in this, that despite how long it took for her to come to faith, a fullness of faith, I remember telling her at least once or twice that I think God's going to do something big in her life. And so I think today's one of those things. I prayed as we were finishing up, I was praying that God would use this to build bridges with people that feel ostracized from the gospel because of their mental health struggles. So as Taylor comes up here, I want you to give her a warm welcome, and I also want you to make it very congratulatory because of her braveness to talk about this, number one, and also the decision that she made to follow Jesus through baptism. So why don't you come up here, Taylor? Yeah. Well, he'll have to turn it.
Is it on now?
There you go. All right. Are you nervous?
I'm feeling very anxious, fittingly. Yeah.
Okay, well, given that that's how you feel, why don't you tell him a little bit about that? That's not one of the questions, I know, but tell him what one of your struggles is.
Just with my anxiety?
Anxiety. Yeah, there you go.
I have a lot of anxiety about just various things all the time.
Okay, so the first question I wanted to ask you, and the one that you approved of, is how did your anxiety perceive, how did your anxiety affect how you perceive following Jesus?
Well, I would feel very anxious about just not being worthy of following Jesus or having a close relationship with Jesus because of my mental health struggles, because I thought that people who follow Jesus are just so joyful, and that's what we're supposed to be. And if I'm having these struggles, what's wrong with me? Am I not doing something right? Am I not able to have that closeness with Jesus because I don't feel that just constant state of happy and like everything's great and like he's taking care of me and I have no worries?
So some of that should sound familiar to you, because last week one of the misconceptions that I talked about is if we don't feel joy all the time, something must be wrong with us or we must not be close to God. So Taylor helped me form these misconceptions, because all of these are things that we've talked about and we're going to talk about more later today. So here's the biggest question. I think this is going to be like the one that you were the most uneasy with. What kind of interactions with believers were a barrier to you coming to faith? And be as honest as you want to be.
I think just the judgment, I guess, from the Christian community that I don't even know if it really existed on as large of a scale as I thought that it did when I wasn't close to Jesus. But when I was on the outside, it seemed like there was just a lot of judgment from the Christian community. And it was like, especially with mental health, it's like you tell someone, I'm feeling so anxious today, or I'm feeling depressed, I don't know why. And they're like, well, just pray about it, or just open the Bible, or just give it to God. And it's like, you don't need therapy, you don't need medication, you don't need anything but Jesus, and then you'll be healed. And it's like, well, I'm trying that, and that's not working for me. Like, I'm feeling wrong for, you know, seeking counsel or therapy or medication. So it goes back to, am I just not doing the right thing in my relationship with God? So then it goes back to, am I not worthy of a relationship with God? And the anxiety cycle just continues.
Okay, so that's kind of like the negative impacts that believers had on you. This perception of not feeling worthy because, hey, if you're not praying and something's not working, then you must be messed up beyond repair. Okay? What about this though? How have people helped you reconcile your faith with anxiety?
Just being people who are a compassionate and understanding and just loving example of God's grace. Just like Sean happens to be the pastor at this church, but I'm just going to use him as an example. He sat with me for 2 years for hours at a time, and I was at many points, very resistant to faith. And I would give him every reason that I was not going to believe in God or that I just couldn't get there. And he continued as often as I needed to sit with me and try to lead me to God. And he never, ever gave up on me. And if I was him, I'm going to be honest, I would have been like, she just doesn't get it. She's not going to get it. It's, but he never did that. And that is like an example that I am just so thankful for. So just people that just show God's grace and God's love and his mercy, I guess, and just his persistence, that helps me a lot.
So now that you've come to faith, how has that helped you cope with your anxiety? Or has it?
Yeah, it has. So just getting comfortable with learning God's promises and just using those to get through any anxiety and depression that I might experience, and just being able to know that when I'm feeling anxious and sad, like, I'm allowed to feel those things, but they're also not only mine to carry. I can give those to God, and it's not that I'm just cured as soon as I'm like, okay, I'm giving this to you, Lord, but I don't have to carry it all by myself, and I can know that I'm not alone in that, and then I have someone who puts his hand on me and sometimes I just ask him to just put his arms around me even that day and just help me to feel like I'm just being held, and days like that they make my anxiety and depression a lot less intense.
So this isn't on the paper and you didn't approve this, but I think it's okay. If you had to explain anxiety to someone that has no idea or has never experienced that, and I know anxiety is different for different people and felt in different ways, but kind of give us a picture of what the struggle with anxiety is like.
Anxiety is just like this intense state of just worry. And sometimes you know why and sometimes you don't. Sometimes you can feel it physically sometimes when it's super intense. It's like sometimes your body just feels off. You feel like you're almost screaming inside, and sometimes you don't even know why. You're just extremely worried about something. You don't really know what. It's like a state of panic inside of your body, I guess.
And so for those of you that don't know, Barbara and I's oldest daughter, Abby, has had issues with anxiety for years, years and years. And the best way for me to explain it is that it almost becomes like crippling. It's so much worry that it cripples you. It impacts your daily life. It impacts the things that you would normally do. So if you could give someone that struggles with anxiety one piece of advice, what would that be?
To learn to talk to God like you're talking to a friend. I think at first I would try to pray and I would try to be so formal about it and say all the right things and be like extremely direct, but I don't have to be, because God knows my anxious heart better than I know my anxious heart. God knows the root of my anxiety when I don't. And so I'm able to know that. And sometimes, like even during a work day, I'll feel really anxious and I'll go sit in my car for a second and I'll just talk out loud to God like I'm talking to a friend, and I'll say, look, I'm feeling really worried. You already know that. I don't really know why, but if you could just, you know, just help me through that. And to also to just know that you are worthy of Jesus' love, even if you're feeling anxious or depressed, because he knew your heart whenever he called you to him. And so to keep that in mind, I think really helps me to not, because I used to run from God when I felt anxious or depressed. And I think when I realized that was a huge turning point in my faith, I talked to Sean about it, and I was feeling, and I was in a really low valley, and I was like, I'm just praying that Jesus stays close this time, because I just always run away when I feel like this. And I think that that realization really kind of helped lead me to where I am today. So,
anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. Does anyone have questions?
Yeah, that's great. I wasn't going to do that, but if anybody has questions, this is a good person to ask. So a lot of the things you said, ironically, we're going to, I don't say, maybe not ironically, but because of God, we'll talk about those. And I know we talked a little bit yesterday via text, but I had a lot of that stuff that you just talked about in here before we talked. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. I appreciate your willingness to be here. So what do we do with that now? You know, maybe you haven't been willing to open up and say, hey, look, I deal with that too, this anxiety. It's a real thing. So how do we deal with it? I want to address this issue today from two perspectives. And the first perspective I want to address it from is of the person that struggles with anxiety. The question would be, what are some biblical principles that can help? Now, I was really careful last week to tell you, I'm not trying to form any type of doctrine or theology about mental health and faith. What I'm trying to do is give biblical perspectives on it. Because the reality is, we develop theology and doctrine on things that we can absolutely change. We really can't change mental health. We can help people deal with it and cope with it, but it's just like any illness. We don't have the power to change it. Only God does. So this isn't like, I'm going to set my stake in the ground and say, this is the theology of mental health. It's not. It's a perspective. So we have that perspective of the person that struggles with anxiety. And then secondly, I want to look at it from a perspective of how we can help. If we're someone that doesn't struggle with anxiety, how can we help those that do? And what can we do? So first off, I want you to turn with me to Philippians chapter 4, verses 4 through 7. You know, I kept coming back to this. There's the classical text that most people associate with worry, and it's part of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 6, when Jesus talks about worry. And I'm really not going to address that today. I want to look at it from the perspective that Paul gives us in Philippians. Because I read this passage over and over and over, and I found some very interesting things. I'm just going to read you verses 4 through 7, and then I'm going to go back and hit verses 8 and 9. So this is the perspective that a person that deals with anxiety can take to help understand how faith, how being close to Jesus can help with anxiety. Paul wrote this. He said, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Now, the interesting thing to me, there's a couple things, but this is the first one that I picked up on in this passage, is that you have two complete opposites that appear together in this passage. You have anxiety and peace. They're really opposed to one another. Because a person that struggles with anxiety essentially experiences little to no peace. And the key to the passage for me is pretty simple. It's proximity to God. That's the key. So the closer, if we take the text for what it says, the closer we are to God, the more peace we will experience. Now this kind of flies, it sounds like it flies in the face of what we said last week. Last week the misconception was, if I struggle with mental health, I must be far from God. And we debunked that. We said that's absolutely not true. So if we said that's not true, how can I make the statement, the closer we are to God, the more peaceful we will experience? Because they seem to be, you know, opposite. They're not really opposite. Here's why. I was listening to a guy named Paul David Tripp. I fell in love with Paul Tripp when I read a book that he wrote called Dangerous Calling. And ever since then, I have watched his podcast, followed him on social media, you know, checked him out on YouTube. And I was listening to a talk that he did about understanding God and suffering. And Paul Tripp made this statement. He said, "We do not respond to the facts in life. We respond to how we interpret the facts of life." And so he said, we are all really making assumptions. That's what we do. And we're not really responding to the facts, we're responding to how we interpret the facts. And sometimes with the way we interpret the facts are, I must be far from God because I have mental health issues. That's how we interpret it. But the reality is, I can make a statement, the closer we are to God, the more peace we will experience, because Paul is reminding the Philippians that regardless of how you're interpreting the facts, the truth is God is near. That's what he states from the very beginning. He says the Lord is near. And sometimes we all need that reminder, just like Paul felt the Philippians needed. We need to be reminded that he hasn't gone anywhere. Despite how we feel, he hasn't gone anywhere. So the anxiety that we experience in this life, it's not a reflection of God's proximity to us, but rather it's a reflection of how we perceive God's proximity. There's a big difference. Now, the thing that Paul does next is he establishes the fact that he says, the Lord's near. That's what he says first, the Lord is near. And then he says, don't be anxious about anything. Now, I've looked up the word anxious and the word worry that Jesus uses in Matthew chapter 6, and also in the text from, we're going to use later in Luke, they're the same word in Greek. So biblically, worrying, anxiety, they're like hand in hand, they're the same thing. So Paul moves from this fact that the Lord is near, that's the foundational element, then he says, don't be anxious, and it's almost like a command, don't do it. And then he gives us what the secular world calls coping skills. But there's a difference between what you can learn as coping skills in the secular world versus the coping skills that Paul lists here. Okay? And some of you are saying, what in the world are coping skills? This is lingo that you use in the psych world. You know, I picked up on this rather quickly. And here's some illustrations of secular coping skills that work. They do work for people. Finger tapping. Just simple finger tapping. When you get anxious, it helps to focus your mind on one thing, finger tapping. Deep breathing is another coping skill you might hear of. One of my favorite shows when I was a kid was Family Matters. You know, with Steve Urkel and Edward Winslow, I think was the uncle's name. And Urkel got on Ed Winslow's nerves. And Ed Winslow had to go see a therapist because of his anger, because of Urkel. So the therapist taught him to count, and he would count, 1, 2, 3, what the heck is bothering me? You know, that's like a coping skill. So Paul gets to the point here, he says, look, let's get past this, God is near. Now here's some coping skills, here's some things that you can use that will help you when you get into these situations that you feel anxious, that you begin to worry. Now the difference between the coping skills I just talked about and the ones that Paul lists is namely the power of God. The power of God and the presence of God in those skills. And this is what he lists. He lists three: prayer, petitions, and thanksgiving. And we look at that and we say, well, isn't prayer and petition the same thing? Well, close, right? The petitions, or some translations say supplication, sometimes is a part of prayer. But when Paul splits these apart, something interesting happens. He splits them apart for a reason, because there's two distinct aspects that really each one addresses. And when he talks about prayer by itself like that, apart from supplication, this is a form of prayer that is not always asking something of God. So it leads me to believe that Paul is separating these because he's focusing on the praise portion of the prayer. See, because praise is all about recognizing God's goodness. You know, this is really what Jesus said when they said, Lord, teach us how to pray. And he kind of gives them this model. And the very first thing that he does is he praises God. That's what that term, hallowed be thy name, means. It's really just a praise. It's like, God, I know things seem really bad right now, but you alone are good. It's a reframing, so to speak, of your mind. He says, that's important. Do that. Pray. So just praise God for how good he is, even when you don't feel like it sometimes. You know, I told you last week that there's been a lot of times in my life where I haven't really struggled with anxiety so much to the degree that it affects my normal everyday life. But back in October when I was sick, and you all know why I was sick in October, I did experience anxiety, I think, for the very first time. Almost at sometimes close to a state of panic to some degree. And one of the things, I'll be honest with you, one of the only things that could calm me down enough to breathe normally and to try to take a nap was to simply listen to worship music where I could ruminate, because I couldn't sing. I could barely talk, but to listen and ruminate on the words of how good God was. That was the only thing that could calm me enough to relax and breathe. And I think Paul hits on it right here. I mean, this is huge. Praise, even when you don't feel like it, has the capacity to help you reframe your mind. And then he moves on to this idea of petitions, supplication, asking. This is where we ask. This is where we seek God to move in our situations in life. And Taylor said this when she said, sometimes I just go sit in my car and just say, God, I don't know why I'm worrying. I don't know why I have anxious thoughts, but you know I do. I need you. I need you. That's it. James, the book of James, James tells us, you have not because you ask not. So how many times when we enter into these situations in life that raise our level of anxiety, how often are we willing to just simply ask God, help me be less anxious? Help me be more trusting. And we have the tendency to start asking like about all the things that we're anxious about and pray about all the things that we're anxious about when in reality, Paul's saying, just ask God to stop the anxious feelings. And it sounds really simple. And the reality is most of you probably already know these things. Yeah, we know this. The problem is there's a gap between what we know and what we actually do. And so Paul's encouragement is it's not enough to know these things. You have to put them into practice. And then he gives us this idea of thanksgiving. One of the things that I do at the pavilion with the kids there is I make practicing gratitude a normal part of their spiritual experience. Offering thanks, recognizing what we do have. I can't explain it other than it's God moving and working in that. It naturally reduces anxiety over things that we don't have. When you can pause and make a list of all the things that you have to be grateful for, and I'm talking about the normal things, the things that we take for granted every day, just make a list of those things. It's enough to interrupt the negative thinking going on and help you focus on positive things. So everything that Paul lists in this passage, you have to understand this. These are means to an end. Right? The prayer, the petitioning, the thanksgiving, those things are not the goal. Those are the vehicle that help us get to the goal. They're the spiritual practices that bring us into a better understanding of God's very presence in our lives. This is what happens. These things, I can't explain it, but they have the capacity to change our perspective of the current situations that we face. They do. And then you go to verses 8 and 9 of Philippians, and I think it's almost mind-blowing if you know anything about psychology. So this is what he writes in verses 8 and 9. He says, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice. Now there it is. Don't just know it, do it. And the God of peace will be with you. Now, the reason I think these verses are mind-blowing to me is because they give a research-based approach to helping deal with anxiety. Believe it or not, research-based approach. When I look at these verses and how they can be applied to mental health, I couple them with what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5, when Paul encouraged everybody to take every thought captive. He said, "We demolish every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take every thought captive to make it obedient to Christ." And what Paul is doing here is what, again, the secular world, secular psychology calls CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. If you ever have to go seek any type of therapy or counseling for your mental health struggles, they will talk to you about cognitive behavioral therapy. And it is research-based, proven to help people deal with their mental issues. And Paul, I will say, is the one that wrote about it. Nobody in the psych world will probably tell you that, but it's here. It's here. And this is basically what the theory is behind CBT. Our thoughts affect how we feel and act. Our feelings affect how we think and act. And our behavior affects how we think and feel. And it's like this cycle. And so for cognitive behavioral therapy, one of the things that we do is we help people address the negative thoughts and focus on positive thoughts. And notice what Paul does here. He says, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, the positive things in life, focus, set your mind on those things. It's a reframing. It's replacing the negative thoughts that we usually run toward with positive thinking. That's all it is. So, how do we combat our own anxious and worrisome thoughts and patterns? Take those thoughts captive. Take them captive. We have the ability to do that. We have to understand that thoughts are not always facts, and feelings certainly aren't facts. So we can take that thought and get rid of it. We have the power to do that. And here's the next thing that's interesting to me. A recognition or acknowledgement of God's presence equates to experiencing the peace of God. Notice how Paul switches these phrases. In verse 7, Paul said, "And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts." And then when you get to verse 9, he says, "Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you." So he switches the phrase around. It's the peace of God first, and then the God of peace second. And here's what we have to understand about that. The very presence of God equates to peace. See, peace, the way we would like to define it, we would like to think that peace means the absence of chaos, brokenness, or suffering, but that's not peace at all. Peace is not the absence of those things in our lives. Peace is first recognizing God's presence in the suffering, in the brokenness, in the anxiety, in the worry, and then realizing how he's moving and working even in that suffering and anxiousness and brokenness. I talked about Paul Tripp earlier. He was doing an interview with a mental health professional, and this guy made the statement, you know, it's the miracle is not the fact that so little people, comparatively speaking to the broader population, a small percentage of those people deal with mental health. That's not the miracle. The miracle is that the rest of the people don't deal with it, given the world that we live in. Because there's a lot of opportunity for people to be anxious and worry every single day. And what he went on to say is that one of the things that we often do as Christian people, and this turns people away, people that struggle with mental health, this turns them away, is we paint this picture of life that looks like it's all rosy and perfect, and we're supposed to be happy, and if we're not happy, something's wrong. The reality is the world we live in, the situation that God has chosen for us to experience, is suffering and brokenness. That's the chosen path. Normal is experiencing brokenness and suffering. It is abnormal to be happy all the time. But oftentimes in Christianity, that's not the way we talk. We make happy normal when it's not. So hopefully there's some principles here, some perspectives here that help those of you that deal with anxiety at least put some tools in your toolbox and say, okay, I knew about prayer, I knew about Thanksgiving, but now I want to actually put those into practice. And I think if you do that, I'm confident if you do that, you will experience the peace of God, the presence of God in your life. So the next thing I want to do for just a few more minutes is I want to go to that second perspective and look at how we might be able to help people deal with their anxiety. What does that approach look like? So I want you to flip to Luke chapter 10. I'm going to give you the context here while you're flipping over there. I'm going to be in verses 38 through 42, and here's the context. Jesus and his disciples, and we did talk about this briefly last week. This is one of the texts that I quoted. I'm going to go more in detail today. So Jesus and his disciples, they're being hosted at a woman's house named Martha. Martha has a sister named Mary. They open their home to Jesus and his disciples. Martha and her sister are both present during this event. But Mary and Martha appear to prioritize things differently in life. You'll find when we read this in just a moment that Mary is pictured as sitting at the feet of Jesus, and Martha is described as being distracted, worried, the same word for anxious, by all the preparations that had to be done because of the, we'll call it a dinner. And Martha gets to this point where she thinks that Jesus doesn't care about her. He doesn't care because Martha has left her to do all the work, or Mary has left her to do all the work. But what we're going to find out is that this is a misconception of Martha. She doesn't understand what's going on fully. And Jesus addresses Martha about her anxiety in a very fascinating way. So Luke chapter 10, starting at verse 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. And some other translations say she was anxious. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." And here's Jesus' response. He says, "Martha, Martha." The Lord answered, "You are worried and upset by many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." So I want to try to dissect this very carefully. The text points to the anxiety that people feel in everyday life. This is an everyday life setting. It points to the fact that people can become overwhelmed with what might seem normal to other people. Martha is overwhelmed. And it addresses how we can help those people that suffer from this type of anxiety to some degree. Because what we see in this text, there are two factors in this case that are affecting how anxious Martha is. There's two things going on with Martha's life. The first thing is there's some unclear expectations of Martha. And the second thing that's going on with Martha is she has an inability to understand what's most important. Okay? And Taylor kind of hit on this when she talked, and we'll unfold that. In Jesus' response, he does two things that I think are huge. The first thing that Jesus does is he validates Martha's feelings. And then he tries to help her process what's going on. So let's talk about the first thing, where he validates Martha's feelings. In chapter 10, verse 41, he says, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things." That's huge to me, because he reaffirms how she's feeling. He doesn't scold her for feeling anxious. He doesn't say, "Martha, you're crazy for being anxious about this." He doesn't say that. He said, "I can see you are worried and upset about many things," and he reaffirms that. It's okay, Martha, for you to feel that way. I get it. Everybody gets overwhelmed. But he doesn't really stop there. He doesn't just affirm her feelings. "Hey, I see that you're feeling upset. I see that you're feeling anxious." He goes on to help her understand the expectations and things that are more important. He says, "Few things are needed, indeed only one." Now, he points to Mary, right? Because remember, part of the anxious process that Martha was going through was related to Mary. Look at Mary and look at me. Mary's just sitting there, and I can't do that. So Jesus clears the air. All the things that Martha was distracted by apparently were not expectations that Jesus had for her. Jesus did not expect her to make all those preparations. Jesus did not expect her to be in the kitchen slaving away. Jesus did not expect her to have the house spotless and clean when he got there. You know, maybe she thought everything had to be in just the right place. Everything had to be just perfect because Jesus is coming to my house. But what Jesus expected was simple. He just wanted her to be tuned into him. That's why he points to Mary. "Look, Mary is here just sitting. She's with me." And so he lays out the expectation. Your anxious feeling is because you're trying to live up to a set of expectations that really aren't even there. Now, when we are trying to help people deal with anxiety, one of the approaches that we can take is to help them see what the expectations of the situation really are. Because in my experience, what I've found, people that suffer with anxiety, because the anxiety is so overwhelming and overtakes their life, it's difficult to see what the expectations are in that situation. And so what Jesus does, he's like, "Here, let's just clear the air right now. I don't expect these things. I just want you to be with me." And that's, ironically, that's what becomes most important. Right? Martha thought what was important was running around and doing all this other thing. And Jesus said, "No, wait a minute. Those things that you're doing aren't what's important. What's important is just sitting here." So what do we take away from this little encounter that Jesus has? One of the things that we have to understand as a person that may not struggle with anxiety, if we're trying to address people that do, the emotions that people feel in that situation are very real. Don't minimize what they're feeling. Don't make them feel stupid for feeling the way they're feeling. Don't make comments like, "Well, if you really had faith, this wouldn't be an issue." That is damaging to people. It is okay for them to have those feelings. That's part of brokenness. Jesus acknowledged Martha's feelings. Jesus, what he did was he acknowledged the feelings and helped her understand that she had the opportunity to respond to those feelings in a different way. So one approach that we can take to helping people with anxiety is lovingly. That's the key. Lovingly helping them determine what the most important thing in that moment is. Because of the overwhelming feeling, knowing what is important is difficult. Just help them see what the most important thing in that moment is. And then another takeaway is just the unclear expectation part. You know, set clear expectations. Set clear expectations. This is what we expect in this situation. Don't have them try to live up to something that's not even really there. When we communicate our expectations within relationships anyway, clearly, it kind of brings some relief into the situation. So there's one final question that I want to address, and Taylor talked about this. What if my anxiety and mental illness makes me feel that I'm not good enough for Jesus? What if that's the case? And I really think this passage from Luke addresses this really well. Because the whole point that Jesus is trying to get across to Martha is that he just wants her to be with him. It has nothing to do with whether she's good enough or not good enough. He said, look, I just want you to be with me. He wants her to be present with him and just listen to what he's saying. That's it. Here's kind of where we need to come as a body of believers. If mental illness disqualifies people from the love of Jesus, then so would every physical illness that we experience in this life. If a person that struggles with anxiety and depression cannot sit at the feet of Jesus, then neither can the person with diabetes or cancer. It's for those reasons. It is for those very reasons that Jesus came to begin the healing process of all of creation. See, Jesus did not come to rid the world of sin only. It's not just about ridding the world of sin. It's about taking this creation that is broken and suffering and making it all right. Sin is obviously the key ingredient to that. But we get this idea that Jesus is just coming to fix the spiritual problems of the world, and that's not true. Jesus has come to begin the process of fixing the physical, emotional, and spiritual problems of this world. Your anxiety, your worry, does not eliminate you, does not disqualify you from sitting at the table with Jesus. In fact, what I find when I read the New Testament is that those are the exact kind of people that he sought out to sit at the table with. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your presence in our life. Thank you for your unconditional love. Thank you for being close to the brokenhearted. Thank you for revealing yourself in our suffering, in our anxiety, in our worry. And thank you for giving us these spiritual tools that we can use that can give us a better understanding of your presence and peace in our life. God, I pray for those people that have dealt with crippling anxiety and worry. I pray that they would feel your presence in a new, real way. And God, I pray for those people that haven't suffered through those things, that you would soften their hearts to be compassionate the way that Jesus was compassionate with people that suffered. God, bring us to the point where we're willing to suffer alongside people for the purpose of the good news that you bring. I pray these things in your son's name. Amen.